Last week in our discussion of whether the war in Syria is becoming a regional conflict, we heard this from Genev Abdo, a fellow with the Middle East Southwest Asia program at the Washington, D.C.-based Stimson Center.
Syria began as just sort of a protest movement against Assad, but now there's a great and very important religious doctrinal dimension to the Shia-Sunni conflict.
From a protest against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to something much bigger. Well, there have been many moments in 20th century history and in our century when observers have suggested that conflicts between nations are just proxies for the mother of all battles in the Middle East, if there ever should be an all-out war between Muslims, Sunni versus Shiites. Alia Malik is a journalist and civil rights lawyer and the author of A Country Called Amrika, U.S. History Retold Through Arab-American Lives. Alia, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you've spent plenty of time in Syria recently. What is your assessment of this sectarian dimension of the Syrian story? It's certainly there, but how apocalyptic should we be thinking in these terms?
I think it's important to note that sectarianism has become, as I said in the article, has become the vehicle of the conflict, but it was never its impulse. And the reason that it's important to identify this is because if we really want to start thinking about solutions for how we can bring stability back to Syria and stop the killing, we need to sort of understand or be able to distinguish between what caused the conflict and what sustains the conflict.
Does the idea of rivalry between Sunni and Shia Muslims sustain the conflict, or is it some deeper set of forces that could explode, be ignited by this conflict?
I think we need to sort of take apart what sectarianism is. I heard the woman before said it was a religious doctrinal sort of conflict. You know, this isn't necessarily, I mean, there's religiosity and then there's sectarianism. And there can be people who are sectarian without being religious at all. And there are people who can be religious without being, not being sectarian, without being sectarian. They're actually quite secular. There are secular folks who are not sectarian and there are secular folks who are indeed sectarian. So we sort of have to take that apart. This isn't necessarily a doctrinal conflict, but this is a situation where citizenship in Syria is somewhat meaningless, okay? So if you begin to have these existentialist fears that if I don't have a state that protects and guarantees my rights, then I need to look to a protector outside. Similarly, these would-be protectors from outside use the sort of shared religion to be able to impose themselves on the affairs of another country. And that's what you see happening from many angles, whether it's Iran trying to play the patron of the Shiites in the Arab world, or the Gulf countries trying to play the patron of the Sunni Arabs within the Arab world. And I think it's just, we've been sort of talking about sectarianism and doctrinal and proxy wars as shortcuts. And I think we need to sort of unpack that if we're really invested in coming up with a way to end the conflict.
Now, there certainly are arguments over whether, Shia Islam and its, observations about who is a successor to the Prophet Muhammad. Those arguments go on. But what really drives these conflicts is the fact that these religious groups are in positions of political authority over one another in mm-hmm. places like Bahrain or Iraq, and now in this case, Syria. How does the political authority get mixed up mm-hmm. with the doctrine?
Well, in the case of Syria, the regime had a sectarian face. I mean, everybody sort of shortcut says that this is a Alawi minority oppressing a Sunni majority. But we have to also unpack that, because basically what happened in Syria, and I think, I don't know why we have this tendency to want to sort of make everything more foreign to us. But basically, this is a class struggle. You have the effects of climate change, a massive drought that sort of pushed rural people into the peripheries of the cities. So who benefited from the regime? Yes, there were this small circle of Alawites that are affiliated with the Assad family. But the greater beneficiaries were sort of, economic elites who, like the majority of the country, happened to be Sunni. And these are economic elites that lived in the cities. So the conflict, if we insist on viewing exclusively through a sectarian lens, we're not going to really understand what's going on. And, I just want to go back to the idea of, Shia Islam. And, I'm not a religious scholar. I'm not going to get into that discussion. But again, this isn't necessarily about religion, and who, yes, there's some people who are going to get, fundamentalist about, particulars of the theology, but this is really about if I am identified by my sect and I am not going to be protected in this chaos, or I need somebody to protect me. That's where religion becomes, relevant. And it's that looking at who can be your protector and who is, like, and Iran has constructed itself as a Shiite state. You know, if it had constructed itself as a Persian state, then maybe, you know, it would be protecting Persian speaking peoples in other parts of the world. But because it's, you know, chosen this as its sort of central characteristic, it gives it power within countries where there are Shiite populations that aren't in Iran.
Finally, I mean, it's mostly absurd in the Christian world to think of wars between Protestants and Catholics. But where that is not ridiculous, of course, is in Northern Ireland, where there are political dimensions to Catholics and Protestants exactly. having dominion over each other. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, there is a kind of mirroring. It only really is relevant when people decide to make political decisions based on religion.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And, you know, more relevant is that if you live in a state where everyone's citizenship rights are not equal and not protected, you're going to look for something else or someone else to sort of protect those rights. And in a situation where we're in Syria, where it's almost become existentialist, like, you know, survival depends on finding an outside patron. Yes, that's what that's exactly what you're seeing happening. And, you know, hard to imagine, not if we study history, if we know European history, we know about the wars between Protestants and Catholics. That's not, you know, it's not actually that foreign to us.
Alia Malik is a journalist and civil rights lawyer and author of A Country Called America, U.S. History Retold Through Arab American Lives. She spent a lot of time in Syria over the last 18 months. Alia Malik, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.